Well, hi, this is Ray Boland for Idea the Future, the podcast for Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. And today we have with us Dr. Michael Behe, who's professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University and is the author of Darwin's Black Box and The Edge of Evolution, and is the subject of a new documentary called Revolutionary. And one thing about the new film Revolutionary, one of the things it argues, Mike, is that Darwinian evolution has been shown to do really some pretty interesting things, but it's the key innovations, the ones researchers have been able to demonstrate, all seem to be cases where something is getting broken. And I want you to quickly review a couple of your favorite examples, and I say quickly because we want to leave time for another thing I heard you discuss for the first time at the Revolutionary screening here in Texas, that of polar bears. But first, let's start small. And bacteria and antibiotic resistance, give us the elevator pitch explanation here.
Well, in many cases, bacteria develop antibiotic resistance by Darwinian evolution, and that's important, medically important, and so on. And it's been used as a paradigm for Darwinian evolution. People get laughed at when they say they are skeptical of Darwinism. People say that, well, you don't believe in modern medicine. But it turns out that in many cases, the antibiotic resistance develops through the loss of some activity that the bacterium previously had. For example, if an antibiotic is made which will enter into a bacterial cell and mess up a particular molecular machine by sticking to it and gumming up the works, one way that a bacterium can stop it is by deleting or breaking that machine and throwing it away. And oftentimes the antibiotic won't have any effect anymore. Well, let me switch over to a different system that I've spoken about before, which kind of gets this point across and does it for an organism that we're much more interested in, and that's people. Humans have developed a number of mutations for malaria resistance. Malaria, you know, is a disease that kills a million people a year, mostly in Africa, India, and tropical regions. And malaria resistance was pointed to as a stellar example of Darwinian evolution for decades in textbooks. And the most famous example of it is the sickle cell gene, which can lead to sickle cell anemia. Most people have heard about that, but there's a handful of other genes which have mutated and give their bearers some resistance to malaria. Let me just name a couple of them. One is something called alpha thalassemia, in which the gene for part of hemoglobin is broken and thrown away. And for some reason, that leads to resistance to malaria. Also, it leads to anemia, but the anemia isn't as bad as the malaria, but so it's kind of a desperate measure taken to survive in a very hostile climate. And another mutation is beta thalassemia, where a different gene that forms part of hemoglobin is thrown away. And another one is something called glucose-6-phosphate dehydrogenase deficiency, where the gene for that material, glucose-6-phosphate dehydrogenase, which can be abbreviated G6PD, is broken and thrown away. And all of these things help resist malaria. So it turns out that you can have a beneficial mutation, one that will be selected by natural selection in a classical Darwinian process, but the mutation breaks something that was already there. It doesn't build anything. It's tearing down what pre-existed. And it turns out that the more and more science knows, and techniques have been developed in the past decade or two, which allow us to track down mutations that couldn't be tracked down before, the more widely spread we see this degradation phenomenon.
So it seems then when organisms find themselves in a unique and a, I should say, maybe even challenging environment, sometimes selection is able to essentially break something that allows the organism, whether it's a bacterium in the presence of antibiotics or humans in the presence of malaria, that in the presence of those challenges, the organism can survive and at least carry on, But since something was broken, if you take the challenge away, you take the antibiotic away, you take malaria away, well, the organism isn't any better off. It's probably in worse shape than it was before.
That's true, but it can adapt to a particular environment, a hostile mm-hmm. environment. Some of the listeners might be wondering how breaking something can help. So let me give just a little analogy that I find that it helps people to see. And one is this. Suppose your life depended on your car getting a little bit better gas mileage. You know, what could you do to your car to improve its gas mileage? Well, one thing you could do really quickly is, say, tear off the doors and throw them away, or tear off the trunk lid and throw it away, and decrease the weight, and maybe that would give you a little bit better gas mileage. Of course, you don't have the doors and the trunk lid anymore, and they're useful sometimes. But if you were in circumstances where you didn't really absolutely need them and your life depended on the better gas mileage, then away they go. And this is what Darwinian evolution does. Anything that'll help in desperate circumstances will be thrown away without a look backward if it helps the organism survive a little bit better.
Well, let's go back now to what we talked about initially, and that is polar bears. Polar bears are indeed master predators, and apparently there has been an interesting change in polar bears from the brown bear that allows them to exist in this Arctic climate and survive quite well. So what can you tell us about polar bears?
Well, polar bears are derived from brown bears, grizzly bears, and they're supposed to have separated from them about, 300,000-400,000 years ago. And these days, science has advanced to such a point where the genomes, that is the DNA sequence of all of the genetic information of an organism, can oftentimes be completely uncovered. And it's being uncovered for more and more and more organisms, different kinds of creatures these days. And a number of years ago, the brown bear's DNA was completely sequenced. I know listeners know that the human genome has been sequenced. Well, now the brown bear genome was sequenced too. And a few years ago, the polar bear genome was sequenced as well. And one of the things that the researchers were interested in is, you know, well, what changes in the genes of this new species looks like it helped it to survive in its different environment. Of course, polar bears live in the Arctic, and brown bears don't go so far north. And the researchers listed the 20 genes that were most highly selected, that is, the ones that seemed to have the greatest impact on the ability of the polar bears to survive. And a lot of them were involved in metabolism of fat. Turns out that polar bears eat a lot of blubber, a diet very high in fat, and so they have to be able to handle that, and grizzly bears don't. And other genes were involved in heart function. Of course, cholesterol and stuff could gum up your heart. We humans certainly know about that. Yeah, but interestingly, the workers used an analysis to see what the changes were likely to do. And they found that about 50% of the individual mutations were likely to be damaging to the function of the protein. That is, they were likely to make it either work less well or not work at all. And if you look at the individual genes, some proteins had more than one mutation. So, and it turned out that 2/3 to 3/4 of the proteins had at least one damaging mutation. So the take-home lesson is that the great majority of the identified genes that seem to be making a polar bear from a brown bear are degradations of what was already there. Like as I said before, tearing the doors off your car or some other degrading activity. So it seems that not only can you get antibiotic resistance from bacteria or malaria resistance in humans, but you can get a whole new species too by degrading a starting species by degrading something mm-hmm. that was already there. In a previous episode, I think I spoke about the bacterial flagellum and something called a type 3 secretory system, which seems to have been derived from it by degradation and simplification. Well, it seems perhaps nature has started out relatively complex, at least in some things, and can diversify, can fill different niches, can become more handy by separating some pieces of machinery, by degrading things, and specializing in different environments. That seems to be what's going on with the polar bear, anyway.
Well, Dr. Behe, this has been a great interview today, and I appreciate your time. The film Revolutionary is now available, and I understand it also has its own website dedicated to it. So people who've been listening to this podcast, maybe the few others we've already done, what would a listener do who might want to join the revolution?
Well, an easy way is to go to that website. as you said, it's called strangelyrevolutionarybehe.com, just my last name tacked onto revolutionary. And there is a button you can click on. It says Join the Revolution. And there's a number of options for people who want to do more than just watch and listen, somebody who wants to get involved a little bit. And there are various ways you can get involved. So I urge anybody who wants to take a more active role in this area to go do that.
Well, we'd also strongly encourage them to, of course, buy the film and maybe do a screening with friends, family, maybe at a church or a school. And obviously you can find that also at revolutionarybehe.com. Well, Dr. Behe, thank you again for joining us today, and we'll look forward to our next interview together, and thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.